So, Rob, I guess we'll just start with, I looked up the book that Jocko was working from, The Last 100 Yards, on Amazon. I'm just curious if I could get like a sample sent to my Kindle. And it has the most succinct product description I've ever seen on Amazon.
Does it just say book on war or something?
No, it says unique how-to manual on small unit tactics.
Okay.
Which I think is actually, after listening to Jocko podcast number 3, is a pretty good description of what he covered in this podcast. So I want to start the same way we did last time. With I love the idea of designing within constraints. So if you could only share one lesson with somebody that you learned from listening to Jocko podcast number 3, what would that lesson be?
I really like the decentralized command knowledge that comes out of this podcast, and especially like learning about insecurity of leadership too as a close second.
That far outweighs the temporary insecurity that comes from soliciting advice from subordinates, was his quote.
There was a general theme overall in the podcast where decentralized command kept coming in. But yeah, it was pretty much that. So if you're an operator in this scenario, you have the power to make a decision and only go up the chain if it affects X amount of people, right? Like, it's very simple. You have the freedom to act, use your mind. You've been trained. Let me turn that off. And you can execute using your own decisions. I think of that a lot when I hear Jocko talk about by decentralized command.
Well, it was interesting because right at the beginning of the podcast, to elaborate on that, let's get his name. I want to give this guy credit because I just looked him up on Wikipedia. Yeah, H. John Poole is the author's name, and he was saying that he was right up from the jump. He's explaining the difference between maneuver warfare and attrition warfare. And I loved how Jocko did the analogy or the metaphor where he's like, listen, attrition warfare is what that we're just going to stand toe-to-toe with the enemy and fight until one of us goes down or until one of us breaks. And he's like, this is used by large militaries with massive resources. And he drew the parallel to large companies that become bureaucratic over time, more centralized in their decision-making. They use attrition warfare. Startups use maneuver warfare. And I'm obviously predisposed to maneuver warfare. But his description I like too. He's like, in maneuver warfare, the emphasis is on maneuvering. Firepower is only important to the extent that it facilitates maneuver. The overall mission is to win decisively by getting the enemy to surrender. And then he talks about a few mistakes are acceptable and inevitable, which I really liked him using the term inevitable.
Yeah.
Because you are pushing the pace. Control is decentralized. And so the larger question though, and as we continue to learn more about military history as we go through these episodes, I wonder, like now, and this is something I learned a lot from Dan Carlin, listening to his great Hardcore History podcast, how much of the wars that are taking place now and in the future are actually going to be equivalent to like World War One or World War Two, where those seems to be, to me, like war of attritions, right?
I think it was both. I mean, okay. You can make the argument is that there was a lot of like, this was like the first time like intelligence, I guess, was kind of used. And I'm talking about like World War Two, where they code broke the Nazi, what they were using in terms of getting their information out. So we were receiving information and we were maneuvering, giving them false information and then maneuvering against that, going somewhere else and making them think other things. So I think there was some maneuvering there, especially like when it came to like Normandy and that D-Day campaign. But yeah, like it was
the
like,
actual overall arch. I think World War II is like most people consider attrition.
I have X amount of guys versus Y amount of guys, right? Like, is that what you mean?
Okay. Yeah, and then now I think most of it is maneuvering, you know, especially they touched about a little bit in the podcast, in Poole's book. He talks about like, you never want to fight in urban, I don't know if he called it urban combat environments. And then Jocko expounded on that too. He's like, listen, you have 360 degrees. The enemy's
guys
above
below
you.
Which,
yeah. It's
they're
like
in the sewers, dude. Like, yeah,
this is not what you want to
picture.
It kind of echoed what we learned last week about Hackworth, where he's just like, listen, we need to fight this war in a guerrilla manner. Well, that's what Hack was saying you should do, but that wasn't what was actually being done. So you answered that. So decentralized command is basically if you only had to share one lesson. My answer to that same question comes about an hour into the podcast, and they're talking about the human desire to attempt to control chaos, which, like, when I was hearing this, my ears perked up. And I'm just going to read the quote I wrote, or the note I wrote.
Is it humans crave structure, or are they bound by structure? Yeah, I wanted to talk about this, so go ahead.
Human beings are always trying to structure the chaos of battle, and that may be the root of the problem. They want things to be orderly. Combat, life, relationships, business, egos, personalities, etc. are not orderly. The idea we can control chaos is false. And I just love that idea, and it's something that I've come to. Like, when I was younger, I was very much, I thought the world was, you were able to understand much more of the world. And I think the older you get and the more you learn, you realize, like, you're never going to have a complete understanding, like, of the world that we've been born into. Like, it's just far too complex for us, right? And so fighting this battle that you know you're going to lose, where you're trying to enforce structure on what is... by nature chaotic, seems to be like a bad, like, modus operandi, you know? And so now I try to make myself much more flexible to life, because I assume that it's going to be chaotic, and instead of assuming that I could actually control things, which most of the things that happen in our life are outside of our control. So yep. That's just a lesson, like, I kind of want to repeat to myself, and it's something I do think that, like, I've been internalized. Where it's just like, man, you just got to be able to react to all kinds of environments and adapt.
Life is not a straight line. Like, I need to learn adaptability over time, because I may see a few days in advance pretty clearly, but after that, it just gets foggy and foggy. And there's really just, like, in my opinion, there's no long-term planning is stupid, right? Would you agree? Kind of like,
yeah,
go into like 5-10 years, like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about if that's the way you're talking.
Well, I always repeat that, like, planning is guessing. That doesn't mean, like...
Who said that?
That's from the book Eisenhower? Rework. Oh, no, okay. It's from the book. Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's been said over and over again. We're kind of just sharing lessons, you know, throughout. Yeah. Like, they've been said. But where I learned it first, or where I heard it put in that direction, was when I read the book Rework. But your comment just made me think of this tweet that I saved in my phone the other day. And it says, dream in decades, manage in months, work in weeks, and do in days. And I think for me, I have a general idea of what the things I want to do, but I don't have long-term plans. I know exactly what I want
to
do today.
Can you send that to me?
Absolutely. And what I want to do in weeks and maybe a year. But outside of that, like, I try to give myself flexibility, because I also know that I like to change my mind a lot. And I don't, like you said, I was listening to a podcast with the guy that actually wrote WeWork, Jason Fried, and he was talking about, he's like, listen, if you're setting a 5-year plan, you're making a plan for the person you are that's when you set that goal, as opposed to the person you're going to be when you reach that goal. And if you extend that out too long, you're not the same person. Like, look back at who you were 5 years ago and compare yourself to who you are today. Most people are like, they're barely recognizable. You know, so you should just have these general themes and interests that you want to to, like, improve on. And his point was, like, what is the purpose of having a goal? Like, shouldn't you just be doing your best always? And that, to me, like, I do still have goals, but I'm like, damn, that is like that's the purpose of a goal. I'm just trying to reach something, trying to be a better version of myself. Like, but yeah. I should be doing that all the time.
Exactly.
So they talk a lot about, like, the benefits of training, right? And I think that's applicable to anything in your life. Now, they're talking about war, but it could be physical training or training in your job or whatever it is that's important to you. And he's like, it's in actuality, most small-scale battle is won or lost months before, during training. And to me, that made me think of another quote where it's, you don't rise to the occasion. You fall to the level of your training.
I think Seneca or Marcus Aurelius said, let the day find us prepared. Information to be very... very useful, but how do I apply that?
Well, I would just use, like, Jocko's own example, where he kind of prepared, like, what he's doing with Echelon Front, where you're teaching leadership. It's just something he's already, like, it's something you're already interested in, and therefore you already, like, he's very passionate about the subject. That's what he reads about. That's what he thinks about all the time. I think, like, if you're going to, your specific question, if you're going to start a business, like, it should be based around something that, like, you think about constantly, something that you're just, because we don't, like, there's this great Jeff Bezos quote that, like, passions don't choose, like, we don't choose our passions. Passions choose us. And he was talking about the fact that he's selling about $1 billion a year in Amazon stock at the moment to fund Blue Origin, which is his rocket company, you know? And he's like, listen, I've been interested in rockets since I was a 5-year-old little boy. You know what I mean? So, he's awesome. Like, I obviously didn't make a conscious decision at 5 years old that I'm going to dedicate myself to rockets. It's just something that I was naturally predisposed to. And so when I talk to a lot of people that want to start businesses that are already starting businesses, it's like they're like sitting down in a corner trying to think like that a great business idea is just going to pop out. And it's just like, no, like think about the stuff you're interested in and then think about, is there any problems that you can solve around that? And if you can solve a problem for people, they will pay you for that problem.
That's,
you know, in Jocko's case.
That's the way I try to think about it.
Yeah. And in the very narrow, like this narrow discussion that we're having here is like in Jocko's case, like he understands that leadership is complex, it's chaotic, and that companies will pay to have assistance with it because there's an element of leverage to it. Like, if you're going to come in and hire a consultant, you know, I just know a little bit about what consultants make, and they make a lot of money because usually they target companies with a lot of money, you know? So I'm sure these companies that hire Jocko's company are paying him a lot of money. In some sense, that makes a lot of sense because let's say you hire his company to come in for a week and you pay him $100,000, right? But your company is doing $50 million a year in sales. Like, even if they can provide a 10% increase in the leadership of the company, that's $5 million. Are you going to pay $5 million? Are you going to pay $100,000 to earn $5 million, in this case, a net income of $4.9 million? Yes, you're going to. So that's like what I mean by that. Like, all businesses are, they're solutions to problems. Like, look at the industry you used to work in. At one time, you went to culinary school. Like, what's the solution that restaurants solve? Our biological need to eat. You know what I mean? And I don't obviously recommend going into a restaurant business. They're very low margins. I have some friends that are in it, and it's just like, it's crazy. Like 5-6% margins or whatever. Yeah. But
catering's 50%, and that's how a lot of places offset that. But
yeah, I just listened to this podcast by this guy that runs Tuft and Needle, and it's a mattress company you can order online, and they're doing $250 million a year in revenue. And like, what's the solution? Well, first of all, every single person goes to sleep every night, right? So you have a large market. Second of all, buying a mattress in person sucks. And so if you can kind of standardize your product so the customer knows what they're getting and then make it easy, all they have to do is click a couple buttons, and a couple of days later, some dudes show up at their house and put a mattress in their bedroom. Like, that's a lot easier for people, and you see that by people spending, you know, $1,000 on a mattress site.
How does a mattress company prepare for, I guess, you know, how do they train? Like, you know what I mean? This is like,
so in this guy's case, I can give you a specific example.
Let's go ahead.
He was newlywed, and, you know, him and his wife just moved in together, so they went shopping for a mattress. He's like, this is ridiculous. So he's like, I think I can do this better. And so then he just starts researching the industry. He reads everything he can find on the mattress industry. Because here, I want to preface my statement, too. Like, I actually don't think that explicit advice works most of the time. I think you should expose yourself to ideas, let those ideas percolate in your mind, and then take that input, and based on your own unique personality and viewpoint, you're going to come up with some kind of different different outtake, and that's your output. You know, and this guy, he was a software engineer. He's like, this is ridiculous. He's had an engineering like background, so he's obsessed with efficiency. He's like, this industry sucks. So he starts reading about it. He's like, oh my God, they have huge markups. It's very opaque. Then he just starts calling up suppliers. I'm like, okay, well, if I wanted to make my own mattress, how do I do it? And then he realizes it's really, really hard. And he's like, okay, well, if something's really, really hard, that means there's less competition. So if I can solve this problem by actually breaking into this opaque and corrupt industry, and, you know, he clearly thought there's just a few steps, which he wound up finding out. He wound up taking road trips all up and down the East Coast and all up down the West Coast, just visiting mattress factories and realizing most of the people wouldn't even talk to him. And then once he broke through that and he started ordering mattresses, he then cut them open in his apartment and just looked to see what they're made out of, the material and all that other stuff. Like, that's the training. No one can explicitly tell you, and this is why I'm not big on like, I'm really big on self-improvement, but I'm not really big on like self-help books because they're so like rah-rah. And it's just like, you cannot go looking to other people for like specific solutions. You have got to like expose yourself to ideas and let those ideas marinate with other ideas that you may have read or heard or that you may have experienced. And then you're going to come up with something that is unique to like who you are. Because if somebody's just giving you random advice, like that's just that may be good for that person. So I always listen to like what they're saying generally, as opposed to like trying to focus specifically. Okay, how do I have it done? It's like no. You got to figure it out for yourself. That's a rule of life.
Yep.
So training, to answer your question for me, as far as like just in life, like I am a big advocate of reading. Just read whatever you happen to be interested in. And that idea, there's an idea you might read that you might not use for 5 years, you know? So just kind of be well-read. It allows you to like kind of filter out bullshit. And then other things like this, like just make sure you're a good person. Like, how are you spending your time? Eliminate like all distractions that are not beneficial to you. Jocko talks about like watching TV, waste of time. YouTube, waste of time. I take all the stuff I learned from him as metaphors. And so some are applicable to my life and some are not. But I keep that thought in the back of my mind because maybe it doesn't make sense to me now who I am today, but it might make sense in the future. Maybe, yeah. Like, let me give you an example. Like, they're talking specifically about war. So they're like, the shortest road to victory is aggressiveness, constant offensive action. Hit quickly, hard, and keep right on hitting. Give the enemy no rest and no opportunity to consolidate his forces and hit back at you, right? So that's a good advice for war. I don't know if it's applicable right now to what I'm doing, but let me say it's probably applicable to the guy I was just talking about that ran the mattress factory, or excuse me, the new mattress company, because in his sense, like, he had a large and very competitive market. And if he didn't move quickly and start establishing like a first create a great product and then work on like building a brand and being known for creating a good product, then the people that were already in the industry could have just copied it, you know, since they already had the distribution advantage over him, and then might have pushed him out. But he moved extremely fast. And you're talking about they went from like $0 in sales to, I think, 115 million in sales in like 2 years. And I think now in 5 years or 4 years, it's like 250. So even if he stops growing now, he has a profitable, large business that, you know, he used that tactic. Now, that may not be applicable to where you are in your life right now, but that doesn't mean there's no value in not understanding that tactic.
And I've been thinking lately, like, I should write a lot down. Just have, like, some sort of exercise. Be like, all right, what did I learn today? Just keep a good idea. Yeah, I'm going to put it in my notes or something or somewhere. I'm just going to jot it down. Because I have that belief, if I write it down, I'm more likely to remember it. And it's going to be in my brain somewhere, right? But if I just have the thought, it could easily just float off and dissipate like smoke.
So what would you try to get out of this?
My end goal is I ultimately want to be like kind of my I want to start my own business. And the biggest question to me is, well, what the hell do you want to do? Like what? So I want to talk more about my passions daily and see if anything comes about. I want to kind of expound more on that, and I think some of the biggest value are at least like what I don't know if I'd call it value, but like what separates a lot of people from each other is that early onset of knowing what you want to be, right? Like because if somebody grows up knowing they want to be something and they go after it, they're generally a lot more successful in life, and they bear a lot more fruits. I've never really had that. I just known like, oh, I want to be in this industry. And I kind of want to be involved with these kinds of projects and products, but never like, you know what, I love X and I want to, you know, push the frontier of X because it's a passion of mine and I could, you know, bring value to the service or product, right? So that's kind of the things that are rumbling around in my brain. Like if I'm ever going to like get off the launch pad, I'm going to have to start thinking about what passions are actually going to push into a business. And yet for just be, I don't care if it's a lifestyle venture. I just want to have like, I just want my passion to be applied to it. So I'm not just like, you know, making somebody else rich. My fruits of my labor are making me profitable. And then it gives me more control, gives me a lot actually. So
I think that's a good way to close the podcast. And what you're saying there has made me think of this famous quote by Steve Jobs, and I'll just read it here and we'll close on this. And it says, your work is going to fill a large part of your life. And the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do.
Yeah.
If you haven't found it yet, keep looking. Don't settle.
Exactly.
All right, if you like what we're doing, if you like this idea of us going through every single Jocko podcast and talking about these lessons, can you guys please leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts? It would help more people find the podcast. I guess one other thing, you're going to be traveling for work, so we don't know when the next podcast will be. So it'll be TBD, but whenever you do get back, we'll do Jocko Podcast number 4.
I look forward to it.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
Later.